in organizations, loyalty just gets used as this shorthand for customers staying with you. In organizations, if leaders believe that their customers are loyal, then they stop trying to impress them. They focus on acquisition and onboarding, get the customers in the door, and then stop bothering about them. And then those customers end up leaving.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. Me and the team get so much joy when we see you guys raving about us on social, in lists, on blogs, or when you come and find me at events I'm at and say hello. I really do love it. I mean, sometimes I'm a bit crazy busy trying to get somewhere else, but I still love it. So I always like to try and give a bit of a shout out to any of you who are kind enough to come and say hello or to give us a shout out on social, etc. So thank you to Alexandros Papakostas, I hope I pronounced that right, for connecting on LinkedIn and then finding me and saying hello at MailChimp's From Here to There conference earlier this year, back in the summer. Alexandros, it was lovely to meet you, and thanks for coming over and saying hi, and thanks most importantly for listening. If you would like a shout out, you know what to do. It's been a while since we've had an author episode. It's been a long time. It feels like forever since I last had a fellow author on the show to tell us about the insights you can get from their book. So there's two reasons why I'm chatting with this author to break the gap on authors in the show. One is that Janice Thomas, past multiple guest of this podcast, recommended this book and this author to be on the podcast. And if you know Janice, which if you're in the UK e-commerce industry, it's highly unlikely that you don't, you know a recommendation from Janice is a recommendation worth following up on. So reason number one, we've got this author on, is because of that. Reason number two is that the book is subtitled How to Make Life Better for Your Customers and Create a More Successful Organization. Is that not just the name of the game in e-commerce at the moment? Creating a more successful organization and making life better for your customers. So how could we not get the author of this book on? Coming up now, please listen to the end of the episode so you don't miss out on my guest's top tips, which are excellent, and my own take on this episode. And now to introduce our special guest. John Sills is the author of the Leadership Book of the Year 2023. It's called The Human Experience, How to Make Life Better for Your Customers and Create a More Successful Organization. And he's also managing partner at the Foundation Growth Consultancy, where they help organizations achieve customer-led success. Hello, John.
Hello, Chloe. That sounds very grand, doesn't it? Probably kind of write a bit more about how when I get home, my kids just kind of torment me and don't care about any of that at all. But yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Shall I add, and normal person?
And normal. Yeah, I'm very, very normal person. Yeah, if just about, I think. Yeah.
Very cool. It was very cool to have you here. How did you end up in the world of customer interactions and e-commerce?
Kind of completely by accident, I think, as a lot of people probably did. I started my career a long time ago when I was 14 years old on a market stall in Essex. And so right from an early age, really got into customer experience, customer service, selling things to customers, marketing things to customers. And it kind of went accidentally from there, you know, a few kind of frontline jobs. I went to work at HSBC for 12 years, again, like running branches there, and then ended up going up to head office in Canary Wharf. And all of this we can talk about in more detail if you want, but accidentally launched our first mobile app in 2012. So it wasn't part of my job role, but we ended up doing it anyway. And so I ended up in this world of looking after customer experience for HSBC globally, trying to bring together the human side of the business and the digital side of the business. And while I was doing that, I thought, well, I really enjoy this, but I'd quite like to do it across other industries and other organizations. So 10 years ago, left HSBC, came to be a consultant here at the Foundation, and now work with organizations of all shapes and sizes on all kinds of different challenges, including e-commerce, broader marketing and proposition challenges as well. But it means I end up with a nice variety and mix of projects that I do. But yeah, it's entirely by accident how I've ended up, but all the golden thread of enjoying spending time with customers, I think.
I think most of the best careers are completely by accident.
Yeah.
Interesting you had that stint in banking where customer experience is such a big topic, but unlike most of e-commerce, customers would rather not be having to have the experience at all when it comes to banking. Whereas in e-commerce, there's a bit of excitement and there's a bit more, you know, most of e-commerce, someone wants to be going through the transaction process. Whereas in banking, most people would just rather ignore it.
Yeah,
I
think that's exactly right. You know, you see it quite often when you look at things like the Institute of Customer Service Statistics or other reports where, you know, people are more satisfied when it gets to the e-commerce, the retail, the hospitality, the travel industry than they are with your banking and your insurance and your public services. Having said that, I do think it depends what part of banking you're talking about. I mean, everyone's interested in money. People don't want to do the boring bits of banking, which is the, you know, making payments and dealing with your overdraft. Actually, you know, in my experience, people were really quite happy to come in and talk about the more interesting bits. You know, what do I do with my savings? You know, what can I do with my inheritance? Actually, I've got a wedding coming up. You know, can you help me plan for that? I'm really excited about buying my new house. And I tended to find if you engage with customers at that level about the holidays they wanted to go on and the retirement they wanted to have and the mortgage and the house they wanted to buy, then you ended up having some really quite interesting, enthusiastic conversations with people that they were coming. But yeah, it's the payment side is the bit that thankfully now is being taken care of. But I do think there's still room to have those more interesting, exciting conversations to help people plan for the stuff they actually want to do with the money that they've worked hard to earn.
Excellent. Well, look, I could follow that trail for the next couple of hours, but I'm going to pause and take us back to your book, The Human Experience. So what led you to write this book?
I guess there's probably two or three things that meant I ended up having a book that kind of got created. The first was a bit more by fortune, I suppose. So when I left HSBC, I decided to start writing a blog because I figured, you know, if I was going to be a consultant, people would Google me. So they might as well have something to Google that wasn't just my old Facebook account. So I started writing some articles about customer experience, ended up really enjoying it, really, really loving it. And then I kind of always had this idea that I quite wanted to write a book. You know, one of those things that it's like an internal pride thing more than anything else. I wanted to create something tangible that's out in the world. Then the thing that probably really triggered it was one of those classic shower moments, because I'd had all of these blogs and articles and I had all these ideas and I kind of wanted to do the book, but I didn't really know how those two things came together. And then I was in the shower just before COVID and I remember just thinking about human. It just kind of came into my head. It's like kind of human. And I thought, I think that's the theme. You know, I think that's the topic that links together everything I've been trying to say for the last 8, 9, 10 years, that really it's quite simple, isn't it? Why can't we just all be a bit more human in the way we deal with each other and the way we interact with customers? So then, not luckily, but slightly luckily, COVID hit, which meant I had a lot less time commuting and a lot more time at home, which gave me the opportunity to then get on and write the book for the next 12 months, bringing together all of the articles I had, but then going off to interviewing a whole load of CEOs as well and seeing what they had to say, which of course meant I ended up rewriting the book entirely because what they had to say was not what I had said originally. And then the book came out into the world in February last year. So yeah, I just got this real passion for writing. I'm very lucky. I really enjoy doing the writing and having something tangible there. But it was this moment about human and that being the thing that brings it all together that I think probably led to the book and then being out in the world.
Did you find kind of identifying that guiding light of the book made everything else fall into place fairly? I know you had to then go and rewrite it because of what the CEO said.
Yeah,
but did you find once you'd found that North Star, the whole thing fell into place?
Yeah, I did exactly that. I think before that, it's just a collection of thoughts and ideas, observations, really. So most of the way I write my book is storytelling. I love writing stories and telling stories. So most of it is about things I've seen, things I've observed, you know, when I'm commuting, when I'm on holiday, or just when you're in shops. But as soon as you've got that theme, you start being able to, as you say, make those connections between the different stories, start to kind of find the conclusions. And it helps you start to dig into, as is the beauty of writing, doing it helps you start to dig into what you really think about things. So having that theme that tied it together led everything into one direction. Now, there may well have been another theme somewhere else that might have led things into a whole other different direction, but that's the one I chose to go for. And then it's a case of trying to really wrestle with the writing and trying to get that argument flow as tight as it can be.
And you start the book straight in with an argument, I suppose, because you start it off with three myths.
Yeah.
So Why did you start with three myths? And then tell us a bit about those three myths, please.
Yeah, I will. Yeah. I mean, actually, right at the start of the book, I start with a bit of advice from my nan, who lived to 101 years old. And she had two bits of advice for her long life. One is laugh at the world every day. And the other is drink whiskey every day, which I think it's important to just state for the record, I have taken that on very, very thoroughly as a way to live a long life. But in drinking that whiskey, yeah, it led to me to kind of think about these three myths. And I guess I start by trying to say, look, I think this is quite straightforward, right? You know, just organizations act in a more human way with your customers, you know, act with a bit more common sense, a bit more understanding. Like, this should be really simple, but it's not. So there must be something getting in the way. And that's what these three myths were. These are the kind of things that get in the way of organizations just naturally working in a way that should be quite straightforward. And those myths are the myth of customer feedback, the myth of customer loyalty, and the myth of return on investment. And I can touch on all three and we can go into them if you want. But the myth of feedback is essentially that organizations have never had more customer information coming into them as they do have now. You know, we're deluged with data. And then organizations load on top of that all this kind of feedback surveys, this epidemic of feedback surveys, as I call it. You know, you can't have any experience without immediately being asked what you think about it. Now, the problem with all of this data coming in is that it's all at what I describe as the thin end of the wedge. So if you imagine your customer's life as a wedge shape, at one end, at the thick end, you've got all the things that really matter to them, you know, their real world and their real life, their friends, family, their job, their hopes, dreams, ambitions, the things they're trying to achieve. And then you've got the challenges, the things that get in the way. And right at the very thin end of the wedge is you and your organization, you know, a very small part of their overall consciousness and their overall life. But yet 99% of all of this data that comes into organizations is at the thin end of the wedge. What do you think about us? What do you think about our product? What do you think about our service? Would you recommend us? And the reason this myth is dangerous is that it convinces leaders that they're close to what matters to their customers, whereas in truth, they're only really close to customers' opinions of their business. And that's a very subtle but a very significant difference as to whether you really understand what matters to your customers or not. And that's the primary thing that gets in the way of organizations being able to do this. Then the other two myths follow on from that. So the myth of customer loyalty, I don't really believe customer loyalty exists. This is the one I've had the most kind of feedback on, shall we say, since the book came out, which sounds like hundreds of emails. It's not, it's three and one from my sister, and she didn't like the book anyway. But, you know, I don't really think customer loyalty exists. I think that, you know, it sounds obvious to say, but if as an organization you stay more useful to your customers than the competitors and alternatives, your customers will stay with you. And if someone else becomes more useful, they'll leave and go elsewhere. You know, there's no kind of pretense of loyalty in there. Now, that usefulness can take lots of different guises, but you have to kind of stay ahead and stay useful. Customers are only really loyal to friends and family and communities. And then the third is the myth of return on investment. And I guess this comes from being asked over the last 10 years repeatedly by nearly all my clients, how do I prove the return on investment on customer experience or making things better for customers? You know, how do I build the business case for my CFO to put it in? And that's a real myth, actually, because bad customer experience is really expensive to provide. So yes, I think if you improve customer experience, you'll earn more decisions in your favor and more people will stay with you. And I also think it will mean that, you know, it's a better kind of ethical business that you're running, probably. But financially, most organizations that are the most efficient give a great service. And that's because they don't suffer from failure demand. They don't suffer from people phoning up to deal with all the problems that customers have had or having to rework or repeat work as well. So that's why it's a myth, really. The best reason for improving customer experience from a business point of view is that it'll make you, you know, lower your costs as a business. It'll make you a more efficient business to run. So yeah, they're the three myths. And I've got hundreds of stories about all of those, but they're the three myths that I think sit at the heart of why organizations find this difficult.
I love those. I'm going to have to mull further on whether customer loyalty does or doesn't exist. But what I do agree with you on that one especially is, not that I disagree with the other ones, that's the one I'm slightly pondering on, but I think loyalty is certainly the most misused term in any type of marketing. And, you know, e-commerce is a terrible term that means 20 million different things to 20 million different people. And I think loyalty is even worse. So
it's exactly that, really. When you break it down, it is about semantics. And that's really what some of the debates I've been having with people is about. That in organizations, loyalty just gets used as this shorthand for customers staying with you. But again, language matters. Like, the words we use really matter. And I believe that in organizations, if leaders believe that their customers are loyal, then they stop trying to impress them. They focus on acquisition and onboarding, get the customers in the door, and then stop bothering about them. And then those customers end up leaving. In fact, like for your listeners, when I do presentations, it's not quite the same on podcast, but I often ask people to put their hands up if they've got a kind of loyalty card for a coffee shop or a kind of hotel. And then I ask them to keep their hands up if they've got more than one. And everyone keeps their hands up because everyone's got lots of these coffee shop cards. And then I ask them to put their hands up if they've got a partner, husband, wife, boyfriend, and girlfriend. And then I ask them to keep their hand up if they've got more than one. And no one ever keeps their hand up for that question. Because that's loyalty. 9 billion people in the world and you stick with the same person. But, you know, when it comes to organizations, we will be far more fickle and move around if the opportunity presents itself.
Well, and like the loyalty card is definitely, oh, we've ticked the loyalty box
exactly
as
right.
a company. We've done that, or we've implemented a win-back campaign. Yeah, we've done loyalty. Loyalty's complete. It's like, no. People,
exactly
it's
right.
So it's as hard to explain as community. And before I take us down that rabbit hole, so that's the three myths that the book starts with. Then you get into a group of behaviours and a group of enables that we should be taking on as businesses. Obviously, I mean, there's 12 of them in total, so we're not going to dive into them. Guys, if you want to know what they are, you're going to have to go and get the book, because we would be here for the whole of the afternoon if we were going to try and cover all 12 for you. But what are behaviours and enablers? Why are they two different groups of things? Why should we care about them?
Yeah, so I want to say, first of all, even though I'm a consultant, I'm not really a big fan of frameworks. And I deliberately set out to write the book in a way that wasn't reliant on having frameworks or a textbook approach to it. But having said that, you know, I think it is really important that you understand what some of the best organizations do. And what I found, you know, as I was interviewing lots of CEOs and lots of CMOs, is they all had these very similar traits in common. In fact, I was doing it through COVID and I had a little post-it on the side of my desk. And as I was doing all of these interviews, I'd just start to jot down and note down the kind of things that were coming out. And then when I stopped and looked at that, I kind of realized, oh God, I've got like another book. I'm going to have to rewrite the book here to fit it around these. And essentially, the behaviors are the ways that the organizations show up for their customers. It's the experience that they kind of create. You know, there are these seven traits. They're things like being accessible, being very consistent, being very flexible, being respectful, being very proactive. These kind of human ways that organizations act with customers that kind of creates that experience. Now, I think it's really important that every organization defines quite carefully what their own experience is and doesn't just pick a generic one off the shelf. But having said that, all of these organizations I studied had these same kind of seven behaviors in common. And then underpinning that, you had these enablers, and these were kind of the culture of the organization. And we can dig into these in a bit more detail. But these were kind of the ways of working that all of these organizations had that seemed to then just meant these behaviors just happen naturally. So none of the organizations were sat there thinking, well, how do we be more accessible? How do we be more proactive? How do we be more respectful? They just had these kind of cultural enablers, things like being very ambitious, being very connected to customers, having a real kind of focus and perspective, and really being able to kind of empower their teams. They had these cultural ways of working that meant these great customer experiences and these really customer behaviors came out of the other end.
Got you. So the behaviors are kind of the big kind of vision, mission level stuff. And then the enablers aren't as prescriptive as our doors are open from 9 till 5, but they're somewhere between the two. They're more habits and...
Yeah, I think that's right. The enablers I describe as the culture, really. It's the ways of working of the organization. And the behaviors are the experience. It is the way the organization delivers the customer experience to various different people. So you can kind of pick into, you know, for example, like one of the behaviors is about being really accessible. And you can look at that in a few ways. That can mean not having do not reply email addresses, because everyone hates do not reply email addresses. You've got to be accessible to your customers. Or the way the NHS defined it with their blood service, their blood donation service, which is about more kind of being accessible as an organization. So they're kind of quite open and transparent about the way they work. So if you go and give blood, 24 hours after you've given blood, you get an email and it tells you where your blood ended up. And so, you know, I've got an example of someone that gave blood in Birmingham and it got processed in Bristol and it ended up at Great Ormond Street Hospital. And for that person, it's this incredible email to receive that shows that their blood potentially went to save a child's life at Great Ormond Street Hospital. Now, they don't need to do that. You know, it's just an extra step that no one's asking for, but it makes the customer feel incredible. But more than that, it's really good for the business, because do you think the person that gets that email is more or less likely to go back and give blood again if they know their blood's gone to help save a child? Absolutely more. So those kind of behaviors are the ways that they deliver the experience to customers, and the enablers are the culture that sits behind it that makes that their natural way of working.
Love that example. Love that example. Okay. So you've mentioned you've worked in lots of sectors. We're obviously talking to an e-commerce audience here. So rather than dive into those seven behaviors and five enablers, what are the things you see working for an e-commerce business? What are the lessons from your book that an e-commerce business should be taking?
Yeah, I think there's probably two that I'll talk about. One is about humanity rather than human. So my book's called The Human Experience, and lots of people take that to mean you need to have people involved, people on the front line, and it's not necessarily true. You can create incredible digital experiences, but without there necessarily being any people involved. So I'll give you an example. There's a subscription toilet roll company called Who Gives a Crap, and they give 50% of their profits to help build toilets in other parts of the world. And there's no people involved in that experience at all. It's an online subscription service. It's a brilliant, really easy way of ordering. But then they have all these little touches all the way through the experience that really helps. So when your toilet rolls get delivered, they're in a big box, and the box has got nice writing all the way around it, you know, messages to your kids to turn this box into a spaceship, for example. And then when you open the box, all the toilet rolls are really brightly colored. They've got really nice bright wrapping around them. And at the bottom of the box, you've got three bright red toilet rolls, and they're your emergency toilet rolls. And that's what it says on them. And it says, like, if you get to these three toilet rolls, you need to go and buy more toilet roll. Otherwise, you're going to be caught short. And I love it, because it's not only is it really fun and useful, again, it's brilliant for the business, because what do you do as a customer as soon as you see the bright red toilet rolls? You go back online and you order another box of toilet rolls from them. So they've built their next product trigger directly in the box. So I think it's really important as the first thing to build that humanity in everything that you do. And that can be just the language you use, the way you describe things, can be getting away from any kind of corporate jargon. It really, really matters just to have that human approach in any online or any digital, frankly, experience. The second thing is about how to deal with problems when they go wrong. So for a long time, even now, for many of your listeners, if you think about a great customer experience you've had, people will talk about when something went wrong and then when it got fixed well. And that's because it creates certainty. You know, it's not just that it's helpful, it's certainty. And the best customer experiences are based on certainty. And if something goes wrong and someone fixes it really well, that gives you certainty that if something goes wrong again, they'll be there to help you. So you don't really mind that it went wrong. Now, what we've seen over the last 20 years of experiences to become more online only or digital is it become much harder for people to deal with problems if they go wrong. Because in the past, you could phone up or you could speak to someone and that person would take ownership. Now, increasingly, it feels like organizations are hiding behind the inaccessibility that they've got. And for customers, it feels like you kind of fall into this pit of despair, because you don't know how to solve the problem or how to get in contact with the organization. And if you do get in touch with the organization, the person on the other end of the phone or the chat or the email, they don't always know how to help, because they don't understand part of the digital system or the way the process is working anyway. So you end up in this kind of really difficult situation that goes on for 2 or 3 months before eventually you find a route to the CEO, or you just give up and go home. So that's still so crucial, being able to deal with those problems really well. I'll give you a quick example, which isn't e-commerce, but to make the point, a couple of years ago, it was my 40th birthday. Now, people listening can't see, I look about 58, but I was only 40 a couple of years ago. And I went to Premier Inn. I went to York for the weekend and stayed in a Premier Inn with 9 friends, which isn't an amazing way to spend your 40th birthday. But anyway, I was there, got to the Premier Inn, and she said, look, welcome in. Thanks for coming. Really sorry, the hotel's closed. We haven't got any water. That's not a great thing to hear when there's 10 of you 200 miles from home. So she said that you can either take a refund and book somewhere else or go and stay at another Premier Inn 5 or 6 miles away. And that wasn't really a great option. So we took the money, stayed at the even more glamorous Ibis Hotel for £77 more, so £7 more per person. And the next day when I got back, I just contacted Premier Inn and said, look, these things happen. Don't worry about it. Just to let you know, it costs £77 more. Great if you could refund me for that. And I thought that was an open and shut case, but they didn't agree. And over the next 3 months, it took about 15 emails, 10 phone calls. I wrote a brilliant letter to the CEO. They offered me a £100 voucher for one of their restaurants 15 miles from where I live. And then eventually, after 3 months, they sent a check for £77 to split between 10 of us. And on the email they wrote me when they finished all of that interaction, they said, "We do hope this money goes some way in restoring your faith in Premier Inn." And of course, it had done the complete opposite, because all it had showed me was that if there's ever a problem, they're not going to be there to help resolve it. And that's why that's such a crucial part of the experience. Presuming, expecting that things will go wrong, and being prepared to sort them out and take ownership really quickly.
And clearly that cost them way more than £77 to manage.
Absolutely. That goes back to the myth of return on investment, you know.
Yes.
They could have done it straight away. I would have been really happy. I would have carried on booking with them for my business days, and it would have saved them a load of money. But, you know, they don't look at that bigger picture of the cost of failure demand.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. So, John, are you ready?
I'm so ready for this.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
I mean, this is a massively unfair question because there's about 58 books I'd probably recommend. But the one I would go for, the one that came to mind, is 4,000 Weeks by Oliver Berkman. And 4,000 weeks is the average number of weeks we all have to live, which doesn't sound very many. And it's all about time management for mortals. So it dispels a whole load of myths of time management and productivity and really breaks down what you can really do to make the most of the time you've got, because time is the only finite resource, really. So yeah, it's a fantastic book. I'd highly recommend it.
I love a time management book, and I have not got a copy of that one.
Gotta get it. Gotta get it.
Bookshelves had better prepare for another tome. Yeah. Okay, the traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
So it's maybe a slightly odd answer, but for me, it's about being generous rather than being a particular tool. Certainly, we find in our business that if we're generous with our time and generous with our clients, without any expectation it will come back, over time it does come back. So, you know, saying yes to things, helping people out, offering to be a sounding board, you know, offering things for free, you know, just giving little testers, little tryouts, lots of different ways you can apply it. But I think the principle of being generous with what you offer to people does over time get you goodwill that then comes back to you. It's harder to put a number on, but that's the thing that we prize above all else in terms of our business and what we recommend to some of our colleagues and clients as well.
Very on brand for you as well. And the exact opposite of your Premier Inn example.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right, yeah.
The tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
So I've got a lovely little app, and it's called Yoga. It used to be called Down Dog. And it's this brilliant little app, auto-generates a different short yoga workout every single morning. And so I've found it so useful in the past few months. I've got a couple of little kids and running a business of what's going on. Get up in the morning, you can just kind of open the app, press a couple of little parameters, and then it just comes up with this little 15-minute yoga video you can kind of follow and watch. And then you get on with your day, and it tracks your little progress with your streaks. And it's just brilliant. It's such a smart use of data, of video, of AI, of all the different elements that are going into it. And that really helps put me in kind of a more mindful state for the rest of the day and the day ahead. So I'd recommend that as my tool.
Love that. That's a great one. Anything which gets us to do a little bit of self-care very, very easily with a bit of gamification.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. All my favorite things in one place.
Yeah. Okay. Finally, the carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
I'm not sure I'm going to have a great answer to this one, but I think for me, it's just about being very conscious of the decisions that we make. So it's not a particular thing or a particular way of working. And the reason for that is everything exists in context. I don't think you can easily stop flying or recycle more or do this or change your service, et cetera, because everything has a different reason why it's there. But I think just being much more conscious of all the decisions that we make and the impact they might have on the climate, as we were talking about earlier with video podcasts versus audio podcasts, that thoughtfulness, I think, is what we all need to then broadly bring down the impact we're having on the environment, as opposed to one specific, magic wand that's going to solve everything.
Definitely step one, think consciously. Add the factor into all your decisions. Step one, very good. I love that as a top tip. Thank you, John. Before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners where they can get in contact with you and your business?
I can. So you can find me in most places on the internet, normally John J. Seals. I'm most active on LinkedIn. I've also got an Instagram account, which is CX Stories, and a Substack, which is CX Stories. But the business is called The Foundation. And we're based in King's Cross. We're the-foundation.com. And we work with organizations of all shapes and sizes around the world. So you can find me here. You can come to King's Cross if you want. And then the book, of course, is The Human Experience, available in all good bookshops in a few countries around the world. And if you get in touch with me as well, I can send you a signed copy, because you wouldn't believe how many I've got in the office still, Chloe.
I would. You should see how many I still have in my office. Yeah, books, they multiply in cupboards.
They do.
I don't know how, but yeah. It happens. You think you've got rid of them all and then you find another box. Yeah,
and then people send them back.
Well, look, John, thank you so much for being on the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. It's been brilliant chatting with you, and I think you've inspired us all. So thank you for being here.
Brilliant. Thanks, Chloe. Really enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
I do love it when we bring you such an inspiring episode at this time of year, because I know you're all deep and busy in all your tactical stuff for peak season, for the holiday season. So I do like it when we kind of give you one that's just a little bit of inspiration, start tickling those ideas for 2025 and beyond. So really great to chat to John there. I think his book is well worth a look if you want to take that high level look at how you can go about tweaking your whole organization to become far more customer focused, to create that human experience that the book's all about. And love some of those stories and those examples he was giving us. You can get your hands on our notes from this episode, including those top tips and the links to the things John mentioned, by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You can also use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/ the number of this episode into the URL bar, and you'll be redirected to the straight, even to the right episode page. When you get to the website, you can also add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business. And if you like this episode, then you can find all my interviews with authors at ecmp.info/author. Simple as that. We've had a lot of the big e-commerce writers on here, and a lot of very clever customer experience people, and even Michael Gerber from the E-Myth. So ecmp.info/author to go to the page on the website that will give you lots of insight, or give you the list rather, of all the authors we have previously interviewed. Thank you so much for tuning into this and every episode of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a great week, and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.